And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 677. We're here to recap your week 15 fab, talk some big time and surprising or just really good pitchers in the month of June, and much, much more for you here. You can find me on Twitter at BDentric, and my guest, as usual, on the Monday show here, you can find him on Twitter at BreakingBen_T. Ben Tidd, how are we doing, my friend?
Hey, Bob, doing great. It's good to be back for another week to talk pitchers and then fab, of course. And yeah, hopefully it's like we just mentioned, it's crazy that it's July 1st already. And it feels like we were just drafting not that long ago, but now we're halfway done with what we did all that prep work for. And it's going too fast. I mean, I guess it depends on how your season's going. Maybe you wanted to go fast, maybe you wanted to slow down. But yeah, it's either way, it's going fast.
It's going very, very fast. It's been a up and down ride for many of us, I would say. But it's been good. You know, injuries, get guys back, more guys get hurt. Got a few call-ups coming up. That'll be fun. Fab was a little more active this last week compared to previous weeks. The James Wood sweepstakes should be a lot of fun come this Sunday, depending on how the production works out, of course, this week. But it'll keep us on our toes. Every time you kind of think you want to take it easy for a little bit, there's always something around the corner. Before we talk some June pitchers, why don't you let everybody know what you got going on over there at Sports Ethos?
Yeah, ironically enough, I'm doing my streaming pitching article every Sunday comes out. And yes, look for that. It's getting tougher each week as more guys get hurt or more guys just kind of fizzle out and all the good stars get scooped up. I did speculate, though, that with guys like Scherzer and, well, at one point Kershaw coming back, these injured guys, maybe the free agency pool will get a little bit better. But haven't really seen that yet. So we've got to chug along and try to do the best with what we have.
Yep, totally agree. That's all we can do these days. And chug along, as you said, is a good way to put it on this long ride that is a baseball season. So let's talk about some pitching, because pitching has been up and down all season. Do you have some aces for sure? Some we thought would be aces. I haven't really been aces. We have a lot of injuries taking place in pitching. So we're going to highlight some of the better performers in June. There's a lot of captain obvious ones. And then there's some more like, hey, these guys are actually pitching pretty darn good. Let's kind of, you know, highlight this and explain what's going on here to the listeners. And so we're looking at from June 1st, so the whole month of June, Fangraphs. We're looking at Sierra. You know, it's basically an independent ERA estimator, which is very, very good. It's one of the better ERA estimators that are out there. There's many of them, but I think it's one of the best ones out there. So we're going to have some fun here. And the top of the list, like, we're not going to talk about all these guys, but Garrett Crochet leads the way. Shocker. Didn't see that one coming. But I'm curious. We don't have to go deep on some of these top guys, but Tanner Bibee's second on the list. And that might surprise a lot of people, Ben, as, you know, he was – kind of drafted as an SP2 or SP3 in a lot of leagues. He, you know, there were some people that were all in on him, and there's some people that said the fastball couldn't play. We've seen his pitch mix hasn't changed as much as you think, but it's become more effective. And throughout the season, already a 3.47 ERA. We mentioned the June Sierra that he has. And more importantly to me is the strikeout to walk rate of 22.8% has been pretty good this season. So when you look at a guy like Tanner Bibee, are we believing what we're seeing here, or what are your thoughts?
I'm shocked to see how good his numbers are. I mean, it is only a month, so, and he's a very good pitcher, so it's not surprising to see a really good pitcher have a good month like this or an excellent month like this. But for June, he had a 35.7% K percentage, which is the elite of the elite. That's only a couple percentage points behind Crochet, and Crochet was like 38 almost. Bibee's only walking 3.6% of batters in June, which is also phenomenal. The BABIP's not abnormal. It was 286. Left on base was fine, 74%, 75%. And the other estimators, the ERA, FIP, were closer to 3, but, I mean, you can't complain with that either. And I remember looking at Bibee going to drafts this year, and he had, like, his estimators were kind of in the 4s, so I didn't think he was, at least of how talented or how he pitched last year. I don't know if he justified that 100, around that range pick. Especially if you wanted to wait on starter, like maybe if you went heavy 3 starters and wanted him as your 4th, that makes sense because then he has that upside, or even has your 3rd, depending on the size of the league. I could see it. I definitely thought about it in the 15 teamers, but yeah, so it's supported pretty close. The strikeout rates, he has a 14.1% swinging strike rate, so the K rate's a little bit higher than what that kind of supports, but he's limited hard contact for the month, 83.7 average exit velocity. 31.3% hard hit percentage. His ball percentage is only 32% on the month. So he's kind of turning into an ace if he keeps it up like this. I mean, it's only 1 month, like I said, and I remember we talked about him having a little rocky periods earlier in the year. So just got to see if he can keep anything like this going forward the last 3 months. And if he does, he'll go much earlier next year in drafts, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I love Bybee coming into the season. I didn't know he'd be this good, but to me, it was a pitch mix change he needed to make. He didn't really make the pitch mix change, is the crazy part to this whole thing. So, pitchers figure things out for now. We'll see if he can finish out the second half of the season, but it's been pretty impressive. And it's the Guardians have always had a way to make pitchers, you know, be better than we think it felt like. Like Bieber never was really, at least to me, going to be that great. We'll see how they do with Gavin Williams, who comes back and pitches this week, makes his first start on Wednesday. So that'll be exciting as well. But the Guardians do their thing, and we'll see if Bybee can keep it going. After Mr. Bybee, it's Tyler Glass now. It's Paul Skeens. No surprise there. Chris Sale, fifth. He's been an ace, obviously. I want to highlight number six on this list, Christopher Sanchez of the Philadelphia Phillies, who in the month of June has just been one of the best pitchers in baseball, obviously sixth on this list, coming off a dominating start against Marlins, 9 shutout innings with 9 Ks. He's allowed 1 run or less in 4 of his 5 June starts. He's allowed 0 runs in his last 2 or 16 innings, 23 Ks though. So not a ton of strikeouts, but not a lot of walks, ground ball machine. What are you thinking when you look at a guy like Christopher Sanchez?
So he's one of the first guys on the top of the list that has a pretty poor strikeout rate. You kind of alluded to it with the totals, but in the month, it was less than 20%. So that's not ideal if you want to talk about an ace. I mean, Sanchez wasn't drafted as an ace, but to be on this board, you kind of think that he would be an ace. And the Sierra was 2.95. The ERA and the FIP were even lower. Well, the FIP was 2.97. Yeah, and that came with a 1.16 ERA. That complete game definitely helped. I was reading Hunter Brown. It wasn't far off, though. Sanchez was 1.64. Kind of looking at the BABIP and left on base, it's kind of what I like to look at when I look at these smaller samples. 258 BABIP, which is a little low, but it's not awful. Like sometimes you'll see 200 for extended stretch. And the left on base was only 74%, which is right around league average. So, it's weird. Like his average was 205, but I guess that's because – so that's extremely low against, but maybe because the BABIP is a little bit lower, it's so low. But it's kind of weird to see it, the average – again, so low for Sanchez. And it's just, I don't see him. So that the K rate translates to 6.27 per nine. And I don't see him being this successful with that low of a K rate. And I don't think the Phillies defense is that good to support that many batted balls to keep them from being base runners and runs. But I mean, based on where he was taken, I think Sanchez is, you can't really complain with how he's pitching lately.
Yeah. I think it's a great point you make. If you're not getting a lot of strikeouts and giving up a lot of ground balls, there's going to be some of those days where he's finding holes. You mentioned the Phillies defense is not great. He's a really good pitcher. I think he's going to be very good. That changeup can do some nasty things. But if you're not getting the strikeouts and you're relying so much on your defense, there will be nights where things don't go your way. So he's running very, very good right now. I still think he's going to be a very good pitcher. But what he did in June might be the outlier for the season, which should be something to just keep in mind. If you're in a trade league or something, could get some really good return here for Christopher Sanchez. Not sure I want to trade him the way the pitching world is, but you can at least shop and see how things look. Hunter Brown, on the other hand, you kind of were hinting at him a second ago. He's seventh on this list, and he has been an electric factory since May, basically. But in the month of June, Hunter Brown made 5 starts, picked up 4 wins, which is always a plus. But 36 Ks in 31 innings for a just absolutely outstanding 23.3% K to walk. But you meant the Sierra, which is very, very good. We were talking about here at 3.01. This is a guy that's lowered his season ERA from like 8-something to almost 4 even now after his Sunday start. Brown's been great. It's involved a big pitch mix change. So what's your thoughts on Hunter Brown going forward? Because it's been a heck of a resurgence.
For sure. It's I had him on a team. I kind of like Brown going into the year, and he was going in a range where I like the hitters more, so I just never drafted him as often as I wanted to or I thought I would. But after the first start, I was kind of happy that I didn't draft him more. But, yeah, he's definitely turned the ship around. And one thing I – looking at his month-by-month breakdown, one thing I liked about Brown was that his walks have decreased every month as his innings have increased every month. So he had 12 walks in 19 April innings, 10 and 26 in the third in May, and then in June he had only 8 and 31. So they – they kept going down by two each month, and the innings probably went about roughly six or so per month. So that's a great sign. The batting average against also dropped precipitously. It was 388 in April, down to 189 in June. I'm not sure exactly how the BABIP looks, but I imagine, but the K rate went up too. So some better performance on his part and probably some better luck also helped out too. And how he pitched so well in June. And yeah, being on the like you said, the four wins is very nice for a month. That's at least that's over a 20 win season pace, which, I mean, it's not really sustainable in today's game, but wins are so hard to come by. And if you held on to Brown, good for you. And if you were able to pick him up, if you got dropped, even better, because you got a steal. And I always like the strikeout upside, and it seems like he's around a K per inning a little bit more. So it's always nice too.
Yep, it's been awesome with him. I love everything about it, and I don't know how he doesn't continue to be a very serviceable pitcher the rest of the way. He's not. It's tough to dominate as much as he is right now for an entire season, but I just think it'd be very, very good going forward for the Houston Astros. Kirby, Webb, Houck, who even got blown up on Sunday, still sits high on this list of the top 10. Let's just do it because, you know, it's the talk of the town these days, Pablo Lopez. It's been a gruesome season, I think, is a nice way to play it. And if you look at the month of June, people look at peripheral stats. He's made five starts, 15 earned runs in 27 innings for a 5 ERA, but a 3.12 Sierra, 35 Ks in 27 innings pitched for a 23.2% K to walk. He's getting, you know, the swings and miss that you'd hope for him, like a swinging strike rate of close to 15%. Pablo Lopez's underlying metrics have been great for a while. Now, a caveat before I give the floor to you, it does help that his two best games that have been recently at Seattle, who strikes out a million times, and at the A's. So 23 of his 35 Ks came in two starts, where he allowed one run over 14 innings. Let's preface that. But he pitched them. You know, that's how regression works, folks. Sometimes you get those cookie matchups that get you back to where you need to be. But what are your thoughts on Pablo? Because everybody that loves Pablo kept saying, hey, the metrics. Last two starts have looked good, at least. And the metrics right here, he's the 11th best pitcher in June.
For sure, yeah. So I have Pablo on a team, and he's kind of sunk that team along with other players. So this is only one team, but I understand people who are very frustrated with his performance. And so looking at his month-by-month stats, the one thing that kind of stands out to me is, it's not the walks. He's done a pretty good job limiting walks. And his whip isn't that bad, so it makes sense. But it's the home run. So he's allowed 17 home runs already in 94 innings. So that's like a 35-ish homer pace, 34, if you parate that over the full season. And that's not very good for an ace or any pitcher. And that explains why his ERA is 4.88 on the year, and the whip's 1.15. I don't ever recall Pablo having a homer issue like this. I mean, I never really rostered him because I always was scared of. I had him 1 year, but then like the injuries kind of scared me off for a while, and I didn't really draft him too often. But I just took him back on this one team this year, just because I'm like, well, I need to switch it up. And the skills last year, I bought into what he did last year, and yeah, like he hasn't really regressed skills wise. So we mentioned the 3.12 CR, the xFIP's almost identical, 3.17. And well, that part of that though too is that it's normalizing his home run rate to the league average. So on the leaderboard, it should have his FIP. And where's Mr. Lopez? His FIP is 4.08, and that's because of the home run rate. And so I guess you need to try to figure out if you think the homers are going to keep flying out like they are. I don't think Target Field's. I think it's more of a pitcher's park, right? It seems like it's a bigger park.
It is. It's sneakier than people think for power, but it's still more of a pitcher's park, yes.
Yeah, I mean, well, the Twins did break the homer record in the Happy Fun Ball year, yes, there.
That does help.
So, I mean, everyone else had the same ball that year, and they did the best with it. But, I mean, they had a pretty good lineup. But, yeah, with Pablo, I don't know. The walk rate is a little bit higher than the other guys for the month. The K rate in June was 11.67 per nine, which is 31%, which is awesome. So I don't know. I still have faith that he's going to – I mean, so it's a rough first half. Maybe he has like a 1.8 ERA in the second half. I mean, it's possible with someone as good as him. It's just he's got to bank on. I mean, at this point, he's kind of hurt your team enough where if you were to drop him, you don't get any of that positive regression. Let's use that term again, where it's a good thing. But I don't know. He's a tough one. Everyone keeps trying to say that he'll be fine, but it hasn't really worked yet or hasn't really showed up yet.
Yeah, see, it's like I agree. Like, I want to believe it. You talk about the home runs. Well, Joe Ryan and Bailey Ober, they're home run guys also, because it's a trend there in Minnesota. We rewarded the Twins last year saying, oh, look, they made these changes. They're having them throw pitches like Sonny Gray and all these guys, and they're doing great. And this year, Gray's out of town, still pitching good in St. Louis. But these three guys are giving up the long ball. They're like a top 10 team in baseball giving up the long ball. So there's something to be said about that too. But like, I want to believe in Pablo Lopez. But my biggest thing is, and that's why I said it early, it's those two starts are the best you could almost think of outside like the White Sox maybe and some stuff, like Rockies potentially. Getting Oakland, 14 Ks there, and then Seattle, who strikes out forever to everybody. Like, that's just what they do. So those are great matchups to get things right. Kind of looking forward to seeing what Pablo can bring to the table here in the weeks ahead. And if you look at his potential schedule coming up here, he gets Houston. Okay, that'll be a good test. Let's see what he does against Houston at home in Minnesota. And then next week, well, at the White Sox, that should be nice again. So we'll see where things go with Lopez. But, like, if he pitches well against Houston and pitches well against the White Sox again, we're getting even closer to what we're looking for there. And we might have a few more answers, at least, when we talk Pablo Lopez. 12th is Logan Gilbert, 13th Aaron Nola, 14th Sonny Gray, 15th Michael King. Did you want to talk any of them? Because I'm ready to talk the next guy if you're not.
No, it's just good to see King bounce back after a shaky start. And I'm annoyed seeing Aaron Nola here because I don't want to buy into the every other year thing, but it seems to be an actual thing.
And the King thing's fun because a lot of these guys early on we talked about, not all, because a lot of them pitching well to begin with, but like King has got a 3.23 Sierra, but his season ERA is like 2.79. So they're projecting it like he overachieved technically and still the 15th best pitcher in the month, stands out to me quite a bit. Andrew Heaney is number 16. And I talk so much trash on Andrew Heaney. I will not hold back. I've always been one like stack against him in DFS, do this, do that. Last week on our Fab episode with Ryan, he mentioned he added Andrew Heaney in a 15. And I'm thinking, what do you like? I just write off. We all have our little areas where we screw up. We write guys off just because Heaney's one of those guys for me. So that got my attention. Then I saw the waiver wire this week. I was looking. Heaney's been really good. He's 16th on this list, but six starts in June, a 3.41 ERA. We mentioned the Sierra right now. But what I love to see, and he had 10 Ks on Sunday against Baltimore in Baltimore, though. Seven innings, two earned, 10 Ks, no long balls, no walks, which is outstanding. But 39 Ks and 34 and a third innings pitched. He has a 22% K to walk in the month, and he just limiting the damage. Four homers and six starts. Like, that's actually really good for Andrew Heaney from years past. Like, he's pitching well again, kind of reminding me of the Andrew Heaney we saw with the Dodgers for like half a season where he looked good. Now, the question, Ben, should we believe in this Andrew Heaney when you look under the hood?
I'm not going to, because this always happens. He always does the Lucy football trick where Charlie Brown. Like, yep. He always looks good under the surface, but then you end up drafting him and he might have a good stretch, like you mentioned with the Dodgers at 1 year and then right now. But I don't know. He never pitches to what the numbers say he should. And yeah, but like looking at the last 2 months, even in May, he had a 2.96 ERA in 27 innings. The whip was high, but he had 35 hits in 27 innings. So that's going to happen. And maybe he poured bad luck, but yeah, the walks aren't that bad on the year. He's got 22 and 84. So like one every four innings, that's not terrible. The whip's a little high for the year. The ERA is a four. I mean, a lot of that damage came in April though, at least in the ERA department. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess he's a streamer when he has a good matchup. In my eyes, but I don't know, people really like him and they tend to overdraft Heaney. I didn't draft him anywhere this year. I didn't really want to because I never really rostered him that off much, but when I did, I was like, okay, I'm not buying into the hype that was around him. And I mean, it's good for now, and like for Ryan adding him in 15s, I get it, because it's definitely tough. Even though pitching seems to be plentiful, it's in leagues that are that deep, it's just hard to find enough guys where you're confident rolling them out relatively often, and I get taken the stab on Heaney. But yeah, I don't think it's gonna last.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those like enjoy it while you can, folks. I'm just gonna always be skeptical with Andrew Heaney because he's burned me so many times in the past. But you know, kudos to him, he's actually pitching pretty darn good right now. They just got Max Scherzer back. DeGrom's at least throwing off a mound for the first time, and I think I saw Tyler Mahle is supposed to throw a bullpen this week, potentially on a rehab assignment soon. So reinforcements are coming to Texas. Heaney only has to be like that good for a little bit longer. and then he can go back to being the fifth or a long reliever and get out of the way. So that's fun as well. After Heaney at 17 is Cole Reagans. 18th is Seth Lugo. I'm not going to deep dive this. We actually deep dove him on the Bubba and the Bloom coming out on Tuesday. So it's going to be a little preview on that. The one thing I'll say about Seth Lugo, Ben, and I just want to get your 2 cents on this just real quick. Seth Lugo, first off, 11 wins, which is just hilarious when you think of Seth Lugo and the Kansas City Royals. But Seth Lugo has made 18 starts this year, 116 innings pitched to leave baseball already.
Wow. I told you the one stat earlier about the month, yeah. But I would never have guessed Lugo has the most innings pitched, especially as a former reliever for so many years. It's pretty wild.
Yep. Yeah. Because last year was the first year over 100 innings like in his career, like 140 something innings. So like I'm sitting there going, okay, like they're going to let him go. There's no reason not to let Lugo go. But is there a part where eventually hits a wall just because he's old and has never gone this deep? I don't know. But right now he's getting the job done. So enjoy it while you can. And he's getting all these lists every other time. It's Lugo, Logan Gilbert, and Logan Webb is your top three innings pitched this season. So like Burns is up there. Sense. Like there's a bunch of the guys up there like you'd expect to be up there, but having Lugo at the top just makes you go, interesting baseball. After Seth Lugo at number 19 on the Sierra list for the month of June is Taj Bradley with a 3.36 Sierra. Taj Bradley has been awesome. After his first start in June, on June 1st, giving up 9 runs and 3 1/3, he made 5 straight starts where he allowed a total of 4 runs in those 5 starts, and he had at least 7 Ks or more in 4 of 5, which gave him, through his 6 starts in June, a 3.62 ERA, which is just slightly worse than his Sierra. But, man, the strikeouts, a 21% K to walk, because the walks are still a bit of an issue with Taj Bradley. But as a whole, he turned things around. The last 5 starts have just been amazing for Taj Bradley. And it's a guy like we've always known, if he can limit the walks, he's shown he can be pretty good. And over those 5 starts for Taj Bradley, it was 2 walks or less in 4 out of the 5. And I think it kind of correlated pretty nicely for him.
For sure. He was someone I halfway through DC season when we were drafting them, I kind of switched on into being interested in drafting Taj. I got him in the DC. We were together. But then, of course, he got hurt afterwards. So then I just wanted to avoid him in fab leagues because I was upset. I loved him and Lodolo in that range. I thought they were great kind of bounce back candidates after, it was their second years and they had all the strikeout upside. And now Taj is actually showing it. I mean, Lodolo is too, but Taj with the 72 Ks and 55 innings on the year, it's been awesome. And especially the last 2 games where he's got 19 strikeouts and 10 innings, or 11 innings. That's awesome. And that's kind of what I always hoped that Taj would be. And so you mentioned the bad start to June. That really ruined his numbers. His numbers, but without that start, they'd be even better. So he had a 10% walk rate in June, and he had 3 walks and 3 innings in that first outing where he got roughed up pretty badly. So the numbers would be even better if you take that out. And the swing strike rate for the month was 13.4%, which is very good. And the exit velocity in the month, 91.6, I think it probably got hurt by that one start. I'm assuming he probably had a high average exit velocity against that in that outing. But yeah, I mean, there's not gonna be an innings limit on Taj. He had the late start to the season as it was. So he's only had 2 months under his belt. And I'm not sure where the Rays stand in the wild card, but I feel like they're going to try to compete and they need Taj to pitch if they're going to. So there's no shutdown worries in my mind, unless he stays healthy. But yeah, I wish I had more Taj now, but I had my reasons and it's whatever.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I've always been a Taj guy. Like last year when he first got called up, I was all in on Taj Bradley and it worked for a while. And then between injuries, just it was always the walks. Like if he could just limit the walks, things were good. And right now he's doing it. And he's still young. Things can change, but he's showing a pitch mix change. Like he's showing young pitchers, young players take some time to develop and maybe he's finding that groove. So rooting for Taj because that's a heck of an arm and he was available on waiver wires because when he first went on the IL, people dropped him, at least in my 12s. And that could have been a fun one if you took the chance to bring him back. Okay, we don't have to go deep on this, but this is where these lists always make me laugh. Number 20 overall on this list is Ryan Feltner with a 3.39 Sierra in the month of June. Ryan Feltner has made 5 starts in June, allowing 20 earned runs in 27 1/3 for a 6.59 ERA. I know you know Ryan Feltner quite well, Ben. Are you buying this, or are you just like, hey, you know, sometimes you just ignore stats like this.
Well, this is why I liked him at the beginning of the year. And I know Ryan always gets, you always pick on Ryan, but I was right there with Ryan. I remember we were messaging in that one start against the Marlins where he had the lead go. He was like, he had a shot going into the ninth inning and they kept him in. And then they ended up losing the game. I was so upset with that. But so I have some other stats pulled up on Feltner for the month. And the biggest thing, and I think this has always been his problem all year, is that his left on base rate in the month was 38.9%, which is half of what it should be, which is ridiculous to think about. And you said how many runs he gave up in the month, and it explains it, that he just, he gets very unlucky pitching in Coors. I think if he were to get out of there, he could be like John Gray potentially, because that's what happened to John Gray. He's actually usable now that he's on the Rangers. And yeah, there's like, if you look at his Feltner's month to date splits, ERA whip, it wasn't one good month at all. And I mean, the homers aren't there. He only has 12 on the year, which it could be lower, but I mean, that's not terrible. The walks are not a problem either. I think he just gets BABIP to death and everyone who gets on for him scores. But I mean, if he were ever to get traded, I would definitely be right back in on buying on Feltner. And I mean, I kind of gave up on streaming him this year. Even some of the road starts, they don't go too well, but I mean, the numbers are definitely better on the road, but they're still not good. Like 4.65 ERA, 1.31 whip so far this year. And yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate, but I still eventually I'd buy back in if he changed teams.
Yeah, I don't disagree. The skill sets look good. 18% K to walk. The Sierras, like, there's a lot of things you mentioned there that the dude should be better than the numbers dictate, but it just hasn't panned out that way, of course. So it could be interesting still going forward to potentially buy back in on if necessary when it's all said and done. But time will tell. Like, Coors obviously never helps, but he hasn't really been even that screwed over by Coors. It's just been a weird situation, as you mentioned, for one Ryan Feltner. He's no Bailey Falter, but he's definitely in that ballpark, one might say. All right, after Feltner, you had Zach Eflin. It's been a weird year, but his peripherals still keep, you know, they keep you in line there. I want to hit on Reese Olson real quick. Reese Olson, 18.6% K to walk. He had where's it at here? There's 3.44 Sierra in the month. Reese Olson's a guy that his first three starts of June, 5 runs, 8 runs, 4 runs. Last three starts, 0-2-2 with 20 strikeouts in those three starts. A kind of a tale of two halves to the month, a 5.73 ERA on the month, but a 3.4 Sierra. So what Reese Olson should we be believing in, Ben?
I like Reese Olson. I have him on a handful of teams. I think so you look at those outings, the rough ones, he had, where's the game log? He had 12 and 10 hits. We had 6, 12, and 10 in his first three starts. Those are hits allowed and only, but that's 28 and not even 15 innings. So almost 2 hits per inning. And that was just, it's all BABIP. So on the leaderboard, his BABIP here was 376 for the month with a low left on base, 59%. So, I mean, that's why the surface numbers look so much worse than what the Sierra is saying right here. And the FIP was under 3, which is good. I'd rather look at XFIP, but, I mean, that's good to see it that low. Olson only had 4.8 walk percentage, which is very good for an 18.6K minus walk percentage. So that's just below the 20 threshold, which is what I would say elite, but 18.6 is very good. Now he definitely pitches in a good pitcher's park in Comerica. So that helps out. The Tigers are not terrible, but I mean, they're not the best, but they have some decent pieces in the lineup. Hopefully Torkelson comes back and helps with the run, scoring some runs for them. And the one thing that really hurts Reese is because I have him on a few teams is the wins. I'm not sure what his record is right now, but I know he only has 2 wins and he's got a 3.32 ERA on the season. It's hard when, it's hard to compete in fantasy when you have a pitcher with only 2 wins and he's been pitching almost every week for you. Well, at least the ERA and WHIP have been fine. It's just that that black hole in the win column it's annoying. But I mean, as a pitcher, I still like Reese.
And that's the Tigers thing. Because I remember Flaherty, he was getting succumbed by that. He has 5 wins now, but those have all come pretty lately. That's the Tigers. Is the best way I can say those things is Reese deserves much better. That just hasn't happened. Or heck, ask Jacob DeGrom how they used to go as a Giants. Like, Matt Cain was always that guy that just never got him. And it seems like there's usually one guy on, like, every team. Like, just, you're a guy here, you're going to pitch pretty darn good. You're just not going to get the love. when all things are said and done on these ones. So we'll see how this one plays out. All right, a couple more here. We'll get to Adam's question in the chat here when we get to the fab part of the show here. But I want to hit on these. Resolson, and after Resolson, Justin Steele, who's been amazing, but I'm not going to make everybody listen about me gush over Justin Steele for a while. Tariq Skubal, it's interesting just because he's still been great, but he's down to 24th on this list where he used to be in the Garrett Crochet. Like, he used to be in the top 5 to 10. He's stepping back a few is the best way I'll say it, so we don't start a problem here. But Tariq Skubal has come down to earth a little bit. Grayson Rodriguez is 25th. He's scuffled a bit. Bailey Ober's 26th. Joe Ryan is 27th. Mitch Keller is 28th. And I wanted to highlight Mitch Keller here before we get close to wrapping this one up. And Mitch Keller is, I liked him a lot in the past. Had shares of him. Didn't want to pay the price in the drafts this year that he was going for. It seemed like he was just kind of like okay to start out. But over the last month, I've even noticed Mitch Keller's numbers have been good. And in the month of June, when you see Mitch Keller 28th on this list, he had a 3.55 Sierra and 18.9% K to walk, which is outstanding. And over his five starts, he's got 3 wins, which is great. It's been 3 earned runs or less than 4 out of 5 starts, 1 or less than 3 out of 5. He's been very, very effective and looking like that ace where he's getting those strikeouts and just dominating right now. So should we be believing in Mitch Keller once again?
Yeah, so I did – one of my first pieces I did for Sports Ethos was a what did I – so it was – I had to pick some players who were tough to rank, and I chose Mitch Keller as one of the people to write about. And one of the things that I saw that made me choose Keller was his lowest swing strike rate for the strikeout rate that he had. I think he had like a 27% K rate last year on the season, but his swinging strike rate was – 9 or below 9, which is, it's like a third of the K rate, and it's usually more about half. So he definitely overperformed in the strikeout rate. It's kind of the same thing again in June with Keller. So he had a 9.1% swing strike rate and a 25% K rate. So it's almost that 3-to-1 ratio again, a little bit less. The one thing though that stands out is the hard hit against him was only 20.5%, which is, that's awesome. That's the darkest green I have on my sheet right here. But I think, he volumes his way to strikeouts. And then when I saw that the pattern with the low swing strike rate appeared again with the K rate being higher, maybe it's because he has so many pitches that like along the way in the at bat, he doesn't have the best stuff. But then if he gets 2 strikes on someone, they don't know what's going to come. And then maybe that's how he gets a strikeout by just having so many options to choose from. I don't know if that's a thing. I mean, that's a little bit deeper research, but that's just a hunch that I have. But I mean, Keller provides good volume, and at least this year it's actually is good volume with the ERA of 3.2 and the 1.22 whip. Whip's still a little high. It's always kind of one of his issues. The walk rate isn't the best for the month. What was it? It was 6%, which is actually pretty good, I would say, for him too. It's kind of right around average. So the hits are a little elevated. But yeah, I like Mitch. I only got him on one team. It was a build-related pick because I kind of weighed on starting pitcher, so I wanted a little bit more volume with my – I think it was my SP4, so I felt all right with that one team to take him. And at first it was a little bit rocky. In April he had almost a 5 ERA and almost a 1.5 WHIP, but he's been much better. His May was even better than his June. He had a sub 1.5 ERA in May and a WHIP under 1. So that kind of put him on the right track. But yeah, he's always gonna be an enigma probably, Keller. Yep. But while I have him right now, I hope he keeps it up. And yeah, I think he's solid. He's not going to blow you away as a top of the line starter, but I think he's just good.
Yep, I'm with you. And he's just, I felt like he started out kind of slow, but I was just mistaken. It's like he still pitched well, and it's just gotten better as the season's gone on. So sorry, Corbin Young. I apologize for my faults there. Your boy is still pitching great. Keep up the good work on all the content you got pouring out there for Mitch Keller. Rounding out the top 30 is Max Fried and then Nathan Eovaldi. So I think we'll wrap it up there. Ben, is there any names that we didn't talk about that you were wanted to like just discuss real quickly, or do you want to talk some fab? Because it was a fun fab week.
Just a couple of quick points. So I think Justin Steele is still winless.
Yes, he is. Yes.
He's right next to Olson.
It's been bad. It's been bad.
I have them on the same main event team, so that's great. Oof. I mean, the ERA and the WHIP is great, but yeah. Let alone the strikeout the win department. So one thing about Grayson that is very good is, so he had some, I remember watching him against the Yankees the one game, And he was just so wild. He couldn't command his fastball. But in June, Grayson only had a 3.1% walk rate. So that's very encouraging. I have him. He's on my most important team right now. So hopefully he keeps up that, keeps throwing strikes and keeps doing that thing. And Joe Ryan had a 4.63 FIP. So that falls in line with the home run issue. And his Sierra was 3.54. So it was a run difference. So that kind of goes in line with the Pablo discussion. And I don't know if you saw me retweet, but Fried, if he didn't have, like, he's been one of the best pitchers over the last, I think, 2 months. If he didn't have those two blowups to start the year, his numbers would be even better.
No, he's crazy, crazy good.
Yeah, like, I think people were saying when it happened that he always has these awful starts. I'm like, there's no way he's going to bounce back from this. It was almost like Bailey Ober bad. But, yeah. I mean, he has, I think his ERA is like 3 on the year. And yep. I bought back into Fried in the Fab draft, so I'm happy with how that season's turned around so far.
Yeah, it's been pretty impressive what he's done because it was rough, and he had the injury early on too. So it's kind of just a rough deal, and he's come back looking great. As Adam says in the chat, the Cubs bullpen is atrocious. It's a shame for Steele. I agree. Big Justin Steele guy over here. It's been painful. Like you said, the ratios are good. Even the strikeouts have been okay. Be nice if when you dominate the way Justin Steele dominates to get a win here and there. That'd be nice, but alas, it does not happen. All right, let's talk some Fab for the week. As usual, folks, we'll recap the bigger moves in the 12-team NFBC OCs. Ben will give us 15-team insights as well, plus just general fantasy baseball goodness. And we'll talk 12s because more of most people play 10s and 12s. So I give the story every show, but new listeners, there you go. That's what we're doing here. And it was a fun week. We'll get to the Max Scherzers of the world, which I was texting with Ryan. He was available in 2 of 3 of mine. I saw Vlad added him. I heard Jeff Erickson was in on him and didn't get him. He wasn't available in every league, but he was available in most leagues in the OCs. So we'll talk about that one because that'll be crushed. We have a listener question about the DeGroms of the world and stuff to maybe look for. So we'll get to that. But surprisingly, I thought the most added player this week would be Noel V. Marte. Must have been kept on a few teams already is my only guess because most OCs, I figured 12 teams. We knew that he was suspended. Like, I had a ton in DCs. I had, like, I think at least half of my Gladiators. I had Noel V. Marte because he was so cheap in drafts. But then, like, I felt like it was by late February, early March, you knew he was getting suspended. So I just crossed him off my list. Apparently, not everybody did because he was added in 100. Well, we'll get to him in a minute. Most added player this week in 142 leagues, the second time around for Heston Kjerstad, 225 max. Dollar minimum, because this is an OC, and that's what we do here, folks, is you have leagues that just are asleep at the wheel, which is so much fun. But Keston Hierstead is back up, and this time around, he's actually getting to play baseball, which is pretty fun to see here, Ben. So what are you thinking on this move here as Heston Kjerstad added in 142 leagues for 225?
Yeah, so I think we have a question about Orioles playing time later, but it's a mess right now, I think. Yeah. And Kjerstad just added to it. No fault of his own. I mean, he wants to make the majors, but he's at least played 4 of the last 5 games for the Orioles started. And one was against a lefty on Sunday. Yep. So that's good to see because they've been very platoon heavy with guys like Urias, Mateo, Mullins, O'Hearn, Mountcastle. Austin Hayes is the righty on the bench. So, yeah, I mean, I think so Heston was available in one of my main events and I think I had a respectable bid in, but I ended up getting someone else that we'll talk about eventually. And I don't know. It's tough to commit too much Fab form because of Cowser's kind of hitting well again. And my arch nemesis, Cedric Mullins, is staying hot. Santander is not leaving the lineup and they like to play O'Hearn and Mountcastle still. So one of those guys could kind of lose playing time and then you have someone at the DH spot. But if O'Hearn and Mountcastle are still there, then it's going to be tough to get consistent playing time for all these young guys. But yeah, I mean, I get the ad. He had 2 homers last week, I believe. Yeah. And 16 at bat. So that's a great start. Getting called back up he had 3 walks and 3 strikeouts. So that's great. Yeah. It's just, hopefully he sticks in the lineup. I know Mike, Curlin's very invested in Kjerstad and wants him to get that outfield eligibility. He's got to wait a little bit longer, unfortunately, because he DH'd a couple times. But yeah, I mean, I like the talent for Kjerstad. It's a great lineup, a great park. He's a lefty, so you don't have to worry about the deep left field in Baltimore. But just the playing time is probably the biggest question.
100%. That's been my issue with Kjerstad and a lot of those Orioles is playing time. Like Kowser had it and still kind of actually does have it. Actually, he never really lost it, but production struggled, but that's coming back, as you mentioned. Kjerstedt surprisingly played in five of the games, even pinch hit in the sixth, which is saying a lot. Like you mentioned, played against a lefty. So that was pretty shocking, actually, that they played him that much. And the talent's there. It's just a matter of can he play. And so I don't know. I might have got him somewhere, but I know he was on my waterfalls, but not at the top of my waterfalls for the playing time concerns I had, especially in 12s. But it's interesting to see. The hit tool is good. We know this. And if he can get the playing time, that's going to be tremendous. Not to mention, like you said, eventually gain outfield eligibility as well, which would be a big plus. Top pitcher added this week, David Festa. And this was interesting because I was wondering, with there's about four or five pitching prospects available this week, how would the dust settle? Well, the biggest prospect on the board that everyone's excited to see, got the most ads. David Festa in 138 leagues, as high as 103, as low as a dollar for Mr. Festa. And he made his debut last week with the Twins against the D-backs, five innings, five earned, two strikeouts. A lot of adrenaline looked like in that start, because over 14 starts in AAA this year, 3.77 ERA, 87 Ks, and 59 and two-thirds. I'm really looking forward to seeing how his week goes. He gets Detroit on Wednesday and potentially gets a two-step at the White Sox, and depends if Paddock comes back or not. If he gets the White Sox and the Giants in 2 weeks, that's an outstanding fab. But what's your thoughts on David Festa?
Yeah, I wasn't too competitive with my bids on Festa, mainly because I was pretty low in fab overall. And I don't know, I just didn't want to go for a big starter, one of those big budget starters, even though I think they're more valuable than hitters are. But I mean, 103 isn't that bad for a max. I'm not sure. I haven't been able to look at Waxman's main event report yet, so I don't know what his max was there. But yeah, I get the appeal with Festa. He had the high K rate in the minors is awesome. That's kind of what you really want with these minor league starters. You want them to be able to show that they can strike batters out. The whips was a little high, but as more of these minor leaguers get called up, these starters, I noticed a lot of them have high whips, and I don't know if it's like they're just trying to throw so hard to get to the majors, or they just can't command their pitches yet, or they're throwing too hard for what they can control, but it seems to be a common theme. I remember Christian Scott, though, didn't have that problem, so I mean, maybe that's probably why I went after Scott a little more aggressively than the other guys that have been called up. But I get the Festa appeal, and yeah, you mentioned with Paddock coming back, it was kind of in the back of my mind too. You don't know how long Festa will stick around for. I feel like they kind of want to keep Paddock in the rotation, and there's also the question of, is he actually hurt, or this trying to give him a little break coming back from Tommy John. But the rest of the Twins rotation seems pretty solid. I guess Festa could kick out Woods Richardson, but he's been all right. I know Festa's the bigger prospect, but I mean, I don't know if the Twins care about that necessarily. But yeah, I mean, it could work out. I did like the Tigers matchup this week, and I did not know about next week. So if it does stick around, that could be a really good fab pickup in theory.
Yeah, I was just worried about him sticking around. Like, I think he's better than Woods Richardson. I think he deserves to stick in that rotation, but time will tell. I think, you know, Paddock might be he's thrown so many innings this year. Maybe make him a long man or go six man rotation. Even that could be. I don't know if you want to with Ober and Ryan and Pablo. You probably want them out there every 5 days. But those are the good questions to have in July, where most teams are, like the Marlins, are looking for five usable arms to put out there, let alone other options. So that's fun. David Festa was as high as 133 in the mains. Looked at that while you're talking. So no, not too crazy. Pretty close to the OCs, actually, which is kind of rare these days. So that was fun to see there. Okay, here comes Noelvi Marte. Added in 135 leagues, like I'm saying. Must have been kept in quite a few to make that check out there. As high as 442, as low as 34. That is quite the situation there. Obviously out with the 80-game PED suspension, came back and struggled in his 14 games or whatever, however many games he had at AAA. Three hits in his return against St. Louis. They went 0-for for the next three games. Does have two steals, though, which is nice. I love Noelvi Marte. I think he's really, really good. Like I said, I have him a lot of DCs. I have him in Gladiators. Didn't get him in Fab this week, I don't think, unless I'm really speaking out of turn here, because I liked him, but I think I went as high as maybe – $60-ish dollars on my leagues, just because I need pitching in most of my leagues more than hitting. And and I have, like, it seems like at least in every team I have a Vientos, a Mark Royce Lewis or someone like that, where I like Vientos a lot. Why would I spend a ton on Noelvi Marte type situation? So it wasn't a necessity. It was more of a want situation.
Yeah, I hear you on that. I did get Marte in one league, but we'll cover that when we get to our FAB results. And yeah, it's so he's different for me because he came up in the to the majors last year and he showed that he could hit. He hit 316 last year, three homers and six steals in 35 games. So multiply that out, give him, I don't know, multiply by five roughly. That's pretty solid. It's 15 and 30 with a 300 average. I mean, you can't really do that, but it's just the kind of skill set that he provided when he got called up. So, and I mean, also too, with the PD, we always wonder if he had, like, what he took and if it actually helped him, and that what is he without whatever he was taking. This is an extra question mark for someone who's also a young, unproven player for the most part. But I mean, the one, so I ended up, I think it was when you had James Anderson on early or in February or so, or maybe closer to March.
He's a big Noelvi guy, yes.
He was. So hearing James kind of back up Noelvi kind of gave me a little more confidence in trying to draft him. But the one thing that kept me from taking Marte was that the projections were very low on him for where he was getting drafted. It wasn't really justified for taking him around maybe pick 150 if you were just go off the projections. And who knows what was going into it, maybe because of the small sample size. Or I think also at that point, too, it was the playing time because everyone was healthy at that point still. And also that's another reason why I wasn't big on Marte. But now with everyone hurt, or well, he was the suspended one, so now everyone else is hurt in Cincinnati. I trust the playing time, so that's why I was fine going after him. And also third base. So for me, either I'm strong in third base or I'm completely – it's a wasteland on my teams in third base. So it was kind of team-dependent as well. But yeah, the speed at third base is awesome, and hopefully brings a good average too, because I think that's also a good possibility, and you could always use average help.
Yeah, he's a phenomenal move where you could fit him in. Like, I think it's one of those where I still think back going, okay, I know I didn't need a third baseman. I need a quarter infield. Should I have still done it? That's where it's going to be one of those. But we'll see. Time will tell on this one. But I think he's a phenomenal talent. And if you had the need and you had the funds, I hope you're pretty aggressive on him, because I don't know if there's much coming down the pipe. Like, James Witt will be fun next week. He already got a single in his debut, his first at-bat on Monday night. So, like, that's going good for him. But time will tell on that one. Michael Toglia, fourth most added player this week, 114 leagues, as high as $46, as low as a dollar. The Rockies play all seven at home this week, then four in Great American right after that. So that's pretty sweet. Toglia is playing every day, pretty much. Lefties, righties, doesn't matter. In the month of June, or he got recalled on June 6th, hitting .238, which is, you know, we don't expect a big average, but five homers, 16 RBIs, three stolen bases. Now he heads into Coors, swinging a pretty good bat over the last 10 days or so. I was very pumped on him because we talked about how corner infield's so murky these days, at first base at least. He's got first base outfield eligibility, which is always a plus. So I was very excited that you potentially had a guy like Michael Toglia this week.
I think he was gone in the main events because I remember looking up Rockies players for the seven-game series, and he never appeared on any of my teams. So I think he was already gone. And so I didn't really look into him too much. But now looking at his little Adam Dunn going on, or Joey Gallo, the nine homers and 127 at-bats is really good, but the 189 average on the year. And I feel like for this being in the OC, this is definitely a stream play, I think.
100%.
Yeah, like even, but just looking at his week by week, he had two homers last week, two the week before, one week 12, then he had a week off, no homers, then he had one and two. So he's basically – but he had the gap from when he was either the minors or hurt. I think you said he's in the minors. So when he's been hitting – he has hit for power when he's been up in the majors. It's just the average is so bad, but I get the stream. I was in on Jake Cave myself, so I get the appeal of trying to get a handful of Coors games in a weird week when you have the short Monday, a small Monday slate. But yeah, I get the appeal for the stream. And in 12s, I wanted to try to hold on to Toglia. I would just use him this week and then probably switch, flip that roster spot.
Use them, bench them, flip them, whatever you have to do, but wouldn't do too much with them. Toglia was added in two main event leagues, so yeah, he's pretty widely rostered in that form. And as you mentioned, John Kenzie Noel, as I've been told is the proper way to pronounce it, John Kenzie Noel of the Cleveland Guardians, came in. It's a home run in his debut. He's hit two home runs in five games now. Got the start in four games and pinch hit in one. He's got three hits, a double, and two homers, three ribbies, which is good. 50% K rate in a small sample, but adding in 113 leagues, as high as 113, as low as a dollar. For me, Ben, I love the power tool that we're seeing. I just didn't know what to expect with playing time when it came to John Kenzie Noel.
No, I get that. I remember looking at him because he was one of the guys I remember getting called up, and I like just wrote his name down for when Fab time came around. And for me, that I don't think I put any bids in for Noel, and that was because of the 2 games in a row where he sat. So he started the first game, hit a homer. He pinch hit in two games, it looks like, but then he hit a homer again when he started. And I know some people were after him because, like, have we talked before with the first base being pretty poor this year? But yeah, it was just the uncertain playing time for me. If you could get him cheap, so, and what was it? His average, his 130. That's pretty high, 113. Yeah, I wonder what his average steep. Was.
Yeah,
even in an especially in an OC, I wouldn't have gone that high for a potential part timer or like a short term ad. But he has great power numbers in the minors. He had 18 homers in 65 games this year, 27 last year, 32 the year before that. So the power is legit. A couple of rough averages too. So a little, I guess, a little Michael Toglia, Adam Dunn ish potentially. And yeah, it's just a matter of playing time. He might be a short side platoon right now. He did start yesterday versus a righty. But I mean, if Noel can get, maybe he kicks out David Fry, because I remember, I think Fry is slowed down and he's been the DH for
He's slowed down quite a bit, yes.
So there's the spot. I mean, Josh Naylor will play first. Maybe Fry loses playing time, just backs up him. He just catches with Bo, but they have Hedges still. So yeah, it's not the worst playing time situation for Noel, but it's not guaranteed right now.
Yep, and that was all it was for me. Like, I like the tool. I saw some Franmil Reyes comps, which we know in fantasy that can be really good at times, really rough at times, but Franmil still had playing time. That's the difference. I didn't know what John Kinsey was going to get. So it's one of those in 12s. In 12s, there's enough streaming outfielders out there. I didn't need to break the bank for a guy that, like, I'd rather go with Toglia for cheaper, play the week, move on type situation. But maybe it'll haunt me. Maybe John Kinsey plays the rest of the year. It's 20 more home runs. That's very, very possible. David Peterson added in 109 leagues, as high as 37, as low as a buck. David Peterson was one of my favorite targets this week, because I've always had a soft spot for Peterson. We've seen the strikeouts come back in the last two starts. This is one thing I like to see. It's been 2 earned runs or less in 4 out of 5 starts, 14 Ks in the last two starts. And then he's got the nice two-step at Washington, at Pittsburgh this week. And then next week he gets Washington again. I think Peterson, at least in 12s, is one of those, like, bench streamers. You're going to use him most of the time, but you're not going to cut him when you don't want to use him, because he's actually got that serviceability there. He was one of the higher priorities for me. But again, like, most of my pitchers outside of Scherzer were like getting $16 or less. I wasn't breaking the bank, but he was near the top of that 16 list for me.
I was in the same range too. I think Peterson was available on one of my teams, and I love the two-step that he has. It's, for anyone not aware, it is the Pirates. Well, it's Washington today, right now. He started, and then the Pirates on Sunday. Or no, that's wrong. That's Manaea. Pirates on Saturday.
It's Washington right now. Yeah,
Pirates. Yeah, Washington now. Pittsburgh on Saturday. But other than that, though, I remember, I think we talked about Peterson as an ad before or another show, but it's the walks for me. So I have the June stats up still. Peterson had a 12% walk rate in the month and only a 5.1% K-minus walk percentage. So that's kind of steered me away from him as like a traditional streamer, or just a, like you said, a bench streamer. Until he can get the walks down, I won't be as interested in Peterson. But for this matchup, I was interested in getting that volume of the two starts. But I do get the appeal where you like the strikeout upside. It's just that the walks are a little too much for me right now.
Yep, understandable with Peterson. I'm going to skip IKF because he was scratched to get an MRI on his knee. IKF was added in 107 leagues for a size 37, as low as a dollar. So hopefully the news comes back good for the 107 of you on that one.
Fun fact real quick.
Yeah.
Well, not fun for a Yankee fan, but I think it was a Yankee account I saw. They tweeted that IKF has a higher OPS than Volpe this year.
Wow. And hey, Ryan's made fun of me many times because I have IKF in DCs because he's got that eligibility. So I always put him in. I try to draft him a lot, and I've been playing him a ton lately because he's actually been serviceable in 15-team like DCs. So this injury kind of does suck. Uncle Ted in the chat says only a matter of time before Porter Hodge is the closer for the Cubs. I think he's right, actually. I think Uncle, like, Porter Hodge is slowly going that direction. All right. Landon Knack, one of Uncle Ted's guys, picked up in 98 leagues, as high as 43, as low as a buck. He's been spot starting throughout the season. He's made two starts this time around, 9 2/3 innings, 1 earned, 9 Ks in those two starts. For now, they say he's sticking in the rotation. He's supposed to pitch this Wednesday against Arizona, next Wednesday against Philly. They have a 6-man rotation, so that makes things pretty easy with slotting in these guys. But I don't know. I could. This is, again, maybe a blind spot for me, but A, I don't know how long the 6-man rotation and Landon Knack is going to work. And B, it just does, that's not overwhelming. Where I'm like, he had the 7 Ks in one game, 2 Ks in another. It's like, what Landon Knack are we getting?
I get it. I remember telling Curlin, so he had added him, and I remember Uncle Ted and others were confident that he was going to get the start, and I think you and I were unsure about it last week. But I did tell Mike, I was like, well, just be careful. He doesn't go that deep into games, and sure enough, he went 4 2/3 against the Giants and didn't get the win. And so that's one reason why I wasn't as aggressive with Knack. I think it was last week when he was available for me. But like the 7 Ks, no walks, and that start against the Giants is really nice. Year to date, he has 25 Ks and 30 1/3 innings, 8 walks, whip under 1, ERA right around 2. So when you see that on the Giants, I mean, on the Dodgers, it's very appealing. So I get why people were aggressive. And even before, so like before Knack got put into the rotation semi-permanently, he was only up for 7 game weeks. I think I noticed whenever his head would pop up. But yeah, so I don't know how he was as a prospect. I had never heard about him until this year, especially with all of the other highly touted Dodgers prospects. But so far, I mean, he's been fine. He's more of a ratio play for right now. I think he only has 1 win and he's pitched that well so far this year, which is kind of unfortunate when you're on the Dodgers.
It doesn't go deep into games.
Yeah, he has two starts of 4 2/3, 2 of 5, actually 3 of 5, and then 1 of 6. So he's like right on the edge every time. But if you just want ratio help, I get it. That's very valuable too. But like I said before, with Steele and Olsen, wins are hard to come by, and I really wanted to try to get as many wins as possible.
Yeah, I don't want to be putting a guy out there I'm already planning on no wins from. Like the goal is if my guy's starting, I'm hoping to get a win out of those pitchers. But we'll see. I could be wrong on Landon Knack. Spencer Arrighetti, many came around on him at 87 pickups this week at 36 and above. Ben and I are big Arrighetti fans, especially after last week, so that was big. Brendan Rodgers finally getting some love here because of the Coors week, but he's been hitting very well, 85 leagues as high as 38. I believe you quote tweeted the Mets lineup today, Ben. Am I wrong? Did you quote tweet the Mets lineup today?
You are not wrong, my friend. Okay. Yeah, I did not realize he was. Well, it makes sense that this guy's available in so many OCs, yes. But I'll let you continue.
Harrison Bader picked up in 78 leagues, as high as $30, as low as a dollar. And this is a guy that I have in a lot of 15s already. And I wrote him up again this week. I'm off and on him just because he's boring. Harrison Bader is very boring. But Harrison Bader is also hitting .269 with 11 steals, 31 runs, 30 RBIs. He's hitting second on Monday. That's why Ben quote tweeted that. And like my argument for Bader, especially in deeper leagues, is okay. Well, he might not be the flashiest player in the world. He's going to give you some steal. Like he's still on pace for like 12 and 23, 24, which is pretty sweet. But as good as that Mets offense is right now, he's going to benefit tremendously, like in run scoring and whatnot. So I was a big fan. That's what I thought he was going to hit ninth. Now he's hitting second. So what's your thoughts on this Bader move?
So I remember the 1 year, I think it was 2022, I took Brandon Nimmo late around pick 300 because he had always been hurt. And I felt, okay, well, he's a leadoff hitter for a major league team going around pick 300. And if he could just stay healthy, it's all profit at that point. And he's the 300 pick 300. So if he's hurt again, you just drop him. And that was Bader again for me this year. Same team. Only difference is that Bader steals more and he hits ninth. So it kind of offsets the value difference between the two. Nimmo's a better player, don't get me wrong, but Bader has value because he was always appealing as a steals guy on the Cardinals and on the Yankees and wherever else he's been along the way. But yeah, so I have Bader in my most important team, that one main event that's been doing pretty well. And it's been frustrating at times because Bader doesn't play against every righty. But I think so with this ad in the OC, the Mets are one of the 16th with 7 games this week. I think I never heard anyone talk about it, but when Marte went down, yes, it helped Tyrone Taylor get into the lineup, but I think it keeps Bader in there more often because Tyrone and DJ Stewart were playing for Bader with Marte in there all the time and Nimmo in there all the time. So that's one less mouth to feed in the Mets outfield. And the thing with Bader is like his average is good. It's 270, I think, on the year is what we said. Yeah, 269. Yep. And this it was mostly for the late steals, but he's not hurting you in average. I actually was fortunate enough to play him because I had no other healthy bats for the two-game week against the Yankees where he had 2 homers and had a steal. I was very happy that I had to play him for that. He does have some pop. I mean, he only has 227 at-bats in a half season because, like I said, he doesn't play all the time. He hits ninth. So it's more of a stream in a 12, but in 15s, he's like that fringe back end of he's like your outfield 5, and I haven't played him every week, Bader, but I've played him enough where I've gotten the value that I was hoping for. he hasn't really stolen as many bases as I thought he would, but maybe it's to keep him more healthy because he's never hit 400 at bats in a season. And this is like his eighth year or something. So that's probably also why he sits as often as he does. But as long as it keeps Bader healthy for me going forward, I'm fine with it. And And seeing him second, it's because of that team is why I retweeted him. I'm like, this is awesome that he's at second now, potentially. I don't know if it's a matchup thing with the lefty, because I think the Nationals have three lefties. McKenzie Gore.
They face lefties for three straight. You're right. Yes.
Yeah. So maybe he has three games in a row batting second. I mean, I forget who else would be there. It's usually Nimmo. So maybe it's a day.
Nimmo's out with the head injury. Yes.
Yeah. So it's probably short lived. But I mean, if Nimmo's long term, maybe it's a concussion. You don't want to wish that on anybody. But I mean, it could be a huge boost for Bader's value if he bats between Lindor and JD and Pete.
Would be pretty sweet. Lars Nootbaar picked up in 67 leagues. He should be back hopefully by the end of this week from his rehab. So that was a good spec move. Luis Matos picked up in 67 leagues, as high as 39. I like Matos as long as they keep playing him. Jose Siri, sneaky, 64 leagues, actually hitting almost 260 in June. Carlos Santana still out there to 61 leagues. He's been amazing in June. Michael Massey. But let's have some more fun here. So Max Scherzer was added in 53 leagues. As high as 357. So he had the second highest max behind Noel V. Marte. I'll tell you where he went in my leagues when we talk that situation. Mookie Betts was picked up in three leagues. So I don't know why he was dropped, but as high as 351. That stings. James Wood was picked up in eight leagues. He wasn't available in any of my leagues. Woods went as high as 348, Ben, without even seeing him play. Just for fun, how do you think that changes this Sunday?
It's going to be hard to go any higher. It could definitely go lower.
That's rough.
And so this is impressive for OC. It's a min of 159, but that's only when there's eight leagues adding them. So it's a smaller sample. I remember seeing all the Wood highlights earlier in the season when he was hitting those bombs in AAA in April, and people were upset that he didn't get called up to the Nationals. So I can't add Wood anywhere yet. I do have him on a DC, and I did start him because of the four games. Once I saw him, he was going to start versus the lefty. I'm like, okay, there's no platoon risk, I don't think, if they're calling up right now. And they have so many. The Mets themselves are throwing, I think, three lefties against the Nationals in that series, which is very weird to see him so many lefties. But and maybe Wood could push upper 300s if he has a big week. But if all these leagues start adding him, he'll probably be lower, maybe in that low 300 range. I think it's a pretty reasonable estimate for the – assuming he does well, that is. I mean, if he does poorly, maybe it's like in the 200s. But you got to wait and see.
All I know, if he's in the 300s, I have no chance of getting him.
Me neither.
That's exciting to see there. I was like, it's late in the year. Maybe we'll be in the 150 to 200s. Nope. That haven't even seen him play yet, 348. That's fun
stuff. He was more than Noelvi. It's just kind of surprising.
Yeah, that is surprising. Michael King was picked up in the one league. He was dropped. Kierstead was another popular one, which we talked about earlier. Trout was picked up in nine leagues, as high as 200. In the chat here, Adam mentioned in one of these OCQ as OC qualifiers, someone just dropped Mike Trout. Which OCQs you play for the gold, so you don't really probably want to hold them for six more weeks, but who knows? That's an interesting move there. Other than that, the most seem kind of telling here, Ben. I think it's that time of the show. You want to recap what we did for the week?
Sounds good to me. All right.
We'll start with 15s for you.
All right. First name that pops up, Noelvi Marte to me. So this is May number one. I added Marte. I dropped Tyler Black. I bid 248, runner-up of 171. This is a kind of like a YOLO pick. This team's been struggling. This is my Pablo Lopez main event. I got Ozzy Albies. I got J-Rod. A lot of guys doing poorly for me, so I just needed a spark. And someone in my league messaged me after Fab ran and said thank you for getting Marte, because I think we have a top five overall main event contender in my league. And he was happy to see that I blocked him from getting Marte potentially. Yep, so I got Marte. I have Jake Berger, but I'm going to – he's getting hotter now, but I just needed speed, and I needed offense period for this team. So hopefully Marte comes through. Then I added Jose Quintana for his matchup against the Nationals this week. I dropped Chase Silseth. I was on the good end of the Unicorn bid, $6 back from six, but it's bad because I'm not doing well. And then I added Braxton Garrett. I switched him in for Chris Paddock, $1 no backup. Paddock wasn't pitching well, and I like that. Braxton better going forward. So is this a stash switch? I'm not sure if Braxton's gonna be back anytime soon, but I figured I could afford the stash. Main two, Noelle went for 223 in this one, back above 140. So a little bit less than what I spent, but pretty close. Also, I wanted Lars in this league, and he went for 77. And that was I could have got him last year for nothing because he was available for the longest time. And I was kind of kicking myself that. Oh, and he went to Toby of all people. So
of course.
Yep. This league. So I mentioned him earlier talking about Bader, but so my first ad was Tyrone Taylor. I dropped Tyro. So we haven't really talked about Tyro. So this main event, main two is the one that's doing well. I have Harper, Josh Young, who's been really annoying. I hope the checkup is all right. Because when he sees a specialist, but with Tyro, I meant I had three hitters on my bench and they were all on the IL. I just wanted a little extra, a little flexibility because I have the mascot here, so he can cover a bunch of spots. So I see an outfielder on my bench, and Tyrone fit that bill. I trust the playing time going forward. I mean, I think Marte's out for a month, and it seems like Tyrone's going to be the regular replacement. And with the Tyro drop, so I added Brendan Rodgers in this team last week, and he kind of is doing what Tyro is doing this year, but with a better average, or Rodgers projects for that. Apparently Tyro's not going to steal anymore, so I'm not banking on that. So I didn't really want to drop him, but I didn't want to have a full bench of stashes going forward. I already have two reliever stashes, and I just wanted some more warm bodies. So hopefully Tyro doesn't hurt me. I kept him in one main event still, but I don't know. We'll see what happens. Oh, and then you'll appreciate this one. So my second ad was Rodery Munio, and I dropped Cal Quantrill, $1, no backup.
Nice.
So I'm going for that White Sox start this week, and hopefully it's good Rodery. He had a couple rough ones recently, but he has the upside, I think.
He's all or nothing, it feels like.
Yep, for sure. Main three. So I don't think we talked about this guy, but he's kind of popular, at least in 15s. I added Hayden Wesneski. I dropped Joey Estes.
Yep.
Another bad end of the unicorn. I was winner of 14, back of a 14. So I think what maybe suppressed or why people weren't as high on Wesneski was because the Phillies, but they lost Harper and Schwarber, so I'm not as scared about them. And the back end start is the Angels, and they're pretty soft. So I figured I need the volume. So this league is very low in K's, so I just wanted I thought he was the best two-step option available, besides Peterson. I think Peterson was available here too, but I didn't get him. And then I also added Jake Cave, so I did stream him. I dropped Wenzel Perez. I'm surprised Perez is still Ross. Well, it was $3, no backup. So I get it in 15s. Like, Perez has good average, but I held on to him, I think, longer than I should have. So he had a 264 average, Perez, but he has no homers since week six. He has only a couple of steals over the last like 6 weeks, and he gets like one RBI a week and a handful of runs. He's kind of empty batting average, which is valuable and it's what I needed, but I didn't want to fall behind in the other hitting categories. And he's still like 97% rostered in the main event, Perez. And I don't know, I guess people just want that average, which I get because this team needed it at one point. Then my OLAC, I'll finish up. I got Wesneski again, dropped Hudson 14, back up 12. So I was happy with that. Then I finally dropped, well, not really. So I had Ezekiel Duran as my backup third baseman. I have Eugenio Suarez. I added Sano, $6, no backup. I can't get rid of Suarez, so at least I can bench him this week. He's like, I don't know, some sort of disease that won't go away. But yeah, so that's it. Those are the two ads for the OLAC.
All righty. My OLAC, I added Rowdy Tellez, who's been crushing baseballs of late. Like I've mentioned it on some other shows, and then I mentioned it a little deeper in my Fab article this week. But if people are really curious, which they probably aren't this late in the show, but since June 1st, Mr. Rowdy Tellez in .333 with three homers, even tossed in a stolen base. So I need my corner infielder was DJ LeMahieu because I'm an idiot. So Rowdy Tellez took that spot 14-1. I added Brett Wisely because he's taking over for Tyro right now and playing pretty darn good. Dropped Jalen Beeks 13-4. Added Michael Mercado. He's got his two step. I'm not 100% sold on Mercado, but there is some strikeout upside. Got the good offense behind him that should help at least hopefully keep him in the games. Got the Cubs and then Atlanta. Atlanta's not what they used to be, but they are getting better. So I didn't love it, and he was not at the top of my waterfall either. But he got him. Dropped Austin Gomber 11-10. So Mercado was wanted. And then I added Mitch Haniger this week, thinking I'll just see what he can do at a home run last week. His playing time's been sketchy, but it's one of those, if you know he starts getting healthy and starts playing regularly, I'll take my chances. Dropped Austin Hayes, so I'll take my chances there. That's a guy that I could easily see myself dropping in the coming weeks. Bub in the Bloom, Listener League One, added Garrett Mitchell, dropped Austin Hayes 17-0. Mitchell's not playing on Monday. That's fun. Added Davis Daniel, dropped Trevor Larnach 11-2. Daniel looked great in his debut with the Angels. I figured with his two-step this week, excuse me, his two-step this week with the oh, no, he's got one this week, Oakland this week, and then potentially Texas and Seattle next week, which all the strikeouts. So, liked me some Davis Daniel in that one. Auction League 2, excuse me, man. Auction League 2, got Ben Rortfert, dropped Bo Naylor 11-0. Added Michael Mercado, dropped Joe Adell 6-0, so that's no fun.
Losing Bubba.
Yeah. Almost there. Yeah. Go ahead and give your Yahoo.
Bubba needs a breather. All right, yeah, so just remind everyone, my Yahoo League is a 12-team head-to-head daily ads league. So this is over the last week, the moves I made. I added Jock Peterson. Nope, I didn't have to drop anyone. It was an IL league with an A spot, so I had some roster space. I also added Griffin Jacks, just maybe get a vulture save every now and then. Earlier in the week, I covered this last week, but I had added Turnbull. I dropped him, and I streamed Lance Lynn. Turned out to be pretty good, but it didn't really matter my matchup. I dropped Jalen Beeks finally. I was in need of saves on this team, and I was kind of desperate, and I'm not desperate enough for a Colorado closer. I did add David Peterson for tonight's stream against the Nationals. Might hold on to him for the Saturday start, see what happens. And then I also added Charlie Blackman for this the week at home, and I dropped Tommy Pham. So,
yep, all a little active. All understandable there. I'm sorry. My cold is kicking my butt finally. It's taking over. But we're almost done here. In my main event qualifier, my other 15, added Lars Nootbaar, dropped Jack Sawinski 44-16. Added Davis Daniel, dropped Jesus Luzardo, who's going to the 60-day. IL 22-8. Added Michael Toglia, dropped Nelson Velasquez, who's in AAA 18-6. Added Michael Mercado, dropped Jalen Beeks 12-0. So tried to do a full makeover there as my team's like middle of the pack and starting to basically Esther get off the pot in the qualifier type leagues. So I just started firing away there. My OCs, talking 12 teams now. OC one, Max Scherzer went in this league for 233. Runner up was 139. I was 121 in that one. But I got Davis Daniel, dropped Tyler McGill, who went back to AAA 6-0. Added David Festa, dropped Brian Bayo 4-0. Talked about Bayo. I just can't do any more in 12. He was already out in the waiver wire in a lot of places. It's been a rough go for Bayo. Hopefully, I'm rooting for him to figure it out. Not on my team right now. And then added Luis Matos, dropped Jack Sawinski 3-0. So I made three pickups for $13 with no runner-up bids. Welcome to OCs. OC2, Noelvi Marte went for 69, runner-up at 67. I got Colt Keith, dropped Tyler Black 3-0. Got Colton Cowser, dropped Max Kepler 3-0. That was a rough go. Most of the guys I wanted, those were at the top of my waterfalls, folks. Just put it that way. OC3. So that's five bids now in OCs with no runner-ups. I won seven bids, six no runner-ups. The one I did win with the runner-up was Max Scherzer in OC3, dropping Tyler McGill 121 to a runner-up of 89. So that made me feel kind of good. We'll see. Could be good or bad with the injury history. And then I added Jose Siri, dropped Andy Páez. This was tough, but Páez has been very underwhelming of late, honestly. 6-0. He could go James Outman on me, have that middle of the year struggle, finish strong, so be it. But in a 12, I can't just play that game. That's got to be in and out. And I mentioned Siri hitting like 260 with six homers and playing every day because of his glove. He's been serviceable. When he starts to go back to the Jose Siri ways of not hitting, I'll move on and go elsewhere, but I'll ride that streak while we can, especially with the Rays. Rays schedule upcoming is not too horrible. Kansas City, you know, Waka, Marsh, you got Lorenzen, Heaney. Heaney has been better, as we said, but there's some nice matchups coming up there for Siri. So I like taking some chances there as well. All right, let's do a few listener questions before we head out of here, before I completely lose my voice, which will be good. Our buddy Stephen Crawford, happy Canada Day, Stephen. Any recommendations on second base that I can stream until Simeon figures things out? His June has been so bad. You had a follow-up. 10-team league, head-to-head categories on Yahoo. So 10-team league, there's going to be a lot of second basemen out there, it feels like.
For sure. And before we start, I also sent you a couple more. I texted you a couple more listener questions we got, just to make sure. Yeah, right. So I basically just went through my Yahoo League for Steven's question and tried to guesstimate on the percentage roster that might be available. jot some names down for him. Jonathan India has been on fire lately. Brendan Donovan's been playing very well too. Joey Ortiz, I think he may be back in the lineup. I never had a chance to check, but he had a head thing going on. David Hamilton, Spencer Horwitz, especially since his league's a OBP league. And then also Brandon Lau, who's before the toe injury was starting to catch fire. So I'm sure at least a couple of those guys should be available in his league.
There you go. I knew it was a good question because I remember Steven listens to Bubba and the Bloom a lot too. So I knew it was a Yahoo league. And I'm like, well, Ben's the man for that one. He's got that thing dialed in. So perfect time to ask that question. Todd Whitestone has another question here for you, Ben. Can you guys discuss your expectations for the near term between now and the All-Star breaks, like the next 2 weeks, basically? Playing time breakdown in the outfield DH positions for Milwaukee. Well, first, what's our playing time situation for Milwaukee and Baltimore? Okay, we'll start with Milwaukee because let's go start with Baltimore because we already kind of talked about this with Heston Kjerstad. So we'll go back to this real quick. He's DHing and playing outfield. You got Colton Cowser back to playing pretty regularly. Seth Mullins is playing good enough. But Austin Hayes is DHing and no one's touching Santander. So how do you kind of see it playing out? It feels like it's a platoon between Hayes and Hayes and Cowser or Hayes and Kjerstad? How do you see it playing out?
Sorry, Mike, but this is what I have right now. Roster Resource has Bolins as the platoon partner with Hayes right now. But they have Heston as a bench bat. But he's been playing, like we talked about with Kjerstad, he's been playing a lot since he got called back up. I don't know. I said before, I hope Mullins is the one who loses out because I want him to not be as good as I thought he was when I took him potentially. And then I dropped him, but I don't know. I still think of what could be O'Hearn or Mountcastle. I mean, the Orioles have been pretty committed to O'Hearn and he kind of has flourished since he's gone to the Orioles, but I don't know. They have all these, O'Hearn's almost 31 and they have all these huge young prospects, but I could see them not wanting to rely on all these young hitters because it's hard to make that transition. I mean, a lot of them have done pretty well so far, but I don't know. Mountcastle has been ill the last couple of days, it looks like, but he's in a play probably. I mean, he could also platoon because he's a righty. I think that's kind of happened with him in the past. I don't know. The Orioles situation is tough. It could be like a hot hand approach for the next couple of weeks, but maybe someone gets hurt. You never want that, but that could kind of free up playing time too.
Yep. No, I'm with you. You don't want it to be, but it feels like if Mullins keeps hitting the way he is, he's going to get that longer leash. Hayes is a little banged up, but he's also going to play against the lefty on Sunday. So I see this being just a gigantic pain in the butt, but it feels like for the most part, you're going to get, say they play 7 games a week. It feels like you're going to get some kind of mix of Cowser, Mullins, and Kjerstad still playing like at least 5 games. It just feels like they're moving guys around enough between the DH and two outfield spots. They're going to play plenty, the two outfield spots, the DH for them, but then other guys will move around. But it seems like they'll get at least 5 games each, which in this era of baseball is actually not horrible. So you can live with that and see where things go. Now, when it comes to the Milwaukee Brewers, I was hoping we get to see Garrett Mitchell. Obviously, we didn't. There is a lefty on the bump on Monday, so maybe he gets to play against the 3 righties coming up here. That would be ideal. Because Garrett Mitchell needs to be out there, I think. I think he's the best. Like, Sal Frelick's been playing great. He's going to be a dude that gets tons of playing time. He's actually not in the lineup on Monday, which is fun. Blake Perkins is playing because he's the switch hitter. It's a messy deal. Even Jake Bowers is sitting, which is glorious. But I think in the end, I think Perkins kind of goes the way of the dodo. But maybe a switch hitting ability to keep him around. But, like, I could see it being a Frelick Chirio platoon with Mitchell in center and Yelich in the right. That's where I see it eventually, but maybe I'm wrong.
I'm a little biased because I held Mitchell in a couple of fab leagues and I have him in a DC, and I was gonna cut him if he didn't get called up this week because I added him thinking he was gonna get activated last week, Mitchell. And yeah, so I wasn't worried about the Mondays. I assumed he was gonna sit tonight to the lefty, but I remember someone saying that why couldn't Sal Frelick be the one who gets sent down, because he's been fine. Yep. But he's a 679 OPS on the year, no power at all, not even running that much. I'm sure he has good defense, but they did want him to move around. So maybe Frelick gets sent down. I think has Churio picked things up, because he was kind of a candidate to get sent down too.
He's been better. I still think I always thought they'd platoon him with Frelick or Perkins, but I could be wrong. Churio has hit better. Yes, still not like great though.
And well, the easy answer too is like the DFA Jake Bowers, because he's not that good.
That's a very good idea.
But maybe because, I don't know, like Reese can play first base. He's the projected DH. I know they like Yelich the DH, so they free up the DH spot by having Hoskins play first base every day. That's also another opportunity. And yeah, I agree with Perkins being the platoon guy for even Mitchell, because last year Mitchell was in a platoon when he was playing, even the last couple of years. So I don't know. I'm hoping Mitchell gets the strong side. I could see Frelick or Bowers getting the short end of the stick. And yeah, or if Churio struggles again, maybe him too. But I think it'll be Bowers or Frelick who loses out.
I'm with you. Joel Anthony says, what are we expecting from Jared Jones the rest of the way? Will they go full stop or skip turns like they did last week? I think we're going to just see skip turns personally. Maybe a full stop come like September, but I think it'll be skip turns.
So I pulled up Jones's minor league stats, and he hit 120 innings the previous two seasons, and he's at 86 right now. So kind of prorates to 190, 180-ish if he were to duplicate his first half. He made 26 starts roughly those 2 years, and he'd be on pace for 30 this year. So yeah, maybe he misses four starts along the way. He'd be at maybe 160 innings. I'm not sure exactly how that would work out, but I think he'll be in there most of the time. Yep. I mean, the Pirates aren't, I had their record, right? They're three games back on the wild card in the NL, three games under 500. It's a big clump of teams there. So they may want to compete, and I don't know. I think he's relatively safe compared to other rookies that we've seen before.
Yeah, I think he's good for 150-ish. I think that's what we got. So we'll see how they play that one out. And then he says, is Reagan's throwing full throttle or will Casey shut him down as well, seeing he's never gone more than 130? I think if he went 130, I think he goes 160 to 170 this year. So I think he's going as long as they think they can compete. Let's put it that way.
I agree. They have a much better record than the Pirates do. The Royals are 47-39. They're the third wild card, and they need Mr. Reagan's if they have a chance to compete. So I think they're going to keep him in the rotation as long as possible.
Everybody calling my shot says, looking ahead, James Wood looks a lot like O'Neill Cruz. Both guys are 6'7", with 80-grade raw power, 60-grade speed, and a 30-hit tool on Fangraphs. Who would you rather have rest the season? Well, if people that listen to my shows, I'll go O'Neill Cruz just because the prospect always has to earn their right to my team. But I'll be honest, James Wood looks pretty darn good.
You also have a beer riding on O'Neill Cruz, don't you?
Yeah, so it kind of like evens things out, so I can win-win on either side now.
Oh, did you have Bo in that bet?
I have Bo in that bet, yes.
Okay. Oh, okay. Yeah. So you're being you're not being biased here. Hedging. Yeah, yes, smart move. You're a betting man. Yeah, I'd probably go with Cruz too because he's been there and done that before.
That's my thing. Because Wood like got the hit his first at bat. He's going to go through a stretch where pitchers start throwing him some stuff he's never seen in his life, and then it'll be adjustment time. And that's where you really found out what the kid has, because he could be really good. They all got to figure that part out.
He has David, a ground ball issue, I think, too.
Well, his base hit was – it was a line drive, but it skipped, like, right by the shortstop they had to shift on. So it might have been characterized as a ground ball, technically, depending on how you define things. So, yeah, that would make sense as well. Dave Petrozello says, one of their big prizes might come up after for us to spend fab on other than Wood. DeGrom and Robbie Ray come to mind, but how many innings can we expect? More big hitting prospects. Honestly, like Marte and Wood were kind of the big ones. Festa was a popular name. I think you are looking at the DeGroms and Rays of the world. There's probably a couple more prospects out there. Like, I'm not thinking of them off the top of my head. Uncle Ted says Devers and De Los Santos. That's who he loves forever, but there's no room at the inn in Arizona is the problem. They have to make room for him through trade. So we'll see when that happens. But is there anybody that comes to mind for you, Ben? Because I'm not the biggest prospect guy to begin with, but it feels like most of the big people are up now.
I think we had a similar question a couple of weeks ago, and yep. I tried remembering who I meant named. You
pulled something up, you're right.
And so Uncle Ted named the right team, wrong player, and that would be Jordan Lawler on the Diamondbacks. And the other one is Colson Montgomery of the White Sox.
Yeah, it's a fun one, too.
Two shortstop prospects. I'm not sure about pitchers. I don't have anything in front of me for that. Because Dave asked during the show, I didn't have time to prep, which is no problem with that. But just from memory, I think Montgomery and Lawler would probably be the two big hitters.
Lawler, I love. It's just a matter of can he get his act together and get healthy. That would be ideal. But I'd give you a quick run through real quick of if there's anybody that stands out. Like if Jason Dominguez comes back, that could be fun.
He was 8 weeks from the injury, though, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, so it'd be like a final month of the season type thing, maybe, if you get him. If you get like a Kobe Mayo or one of those Baltimore kids, that could be another one, because everyone just loves them because they crush it in AAA. But I'm still kind of skeptical on that whole scenario of things. But like, I don't think we're seeing Marcelo Myers. I don't think we're seeing Dylan Cruz this year. So a lot of those kind of guys, I just, you know, maybe next time Kyle Manzardo comes back, people get back in, but I don't think it'll be expensive. So
Tyler Black 2.0.
Yeah. So I think we're pretty much like, I think you nailed the big ones for sure. Timothy, who is in a few leagues with me, great listener, friend of the show, listener of the show. He has a moral question, like morales. Let's say you're in an OC and you have a buttload of fab, but you're in 10th place out of 12. Do you pass on the monster James Wood bit? The monster James Wood bid, or do you play as if you can still win? You play as if you can win.
Yeah, I kind of alluded to this when I was talking about my Starling Marte bid. So in that main event, I think I'm in 11th actually, and I don't know if my team just wakes up, I have a shot. But actually, I'm in 10th now, so a little progress. Yeah, I mean it's only half of the season is over. There's still time to make moves, maybe. Some other guys ahead of you make or get big injuries and or things happen, so it's not over yet. I mean, but people always argue about this, or they debate. It's not an argument. It's your team, your money. You get to run it how you want to, as long as you're not cheating. And I don't think that's anything wrong with making a. I mean, I think it's dumb if you have $1,000 come September and then you just spend $300 on everybody. It means you're not trying the rest of the year. But if you're making moves throughout the year and you just happen to have a lot of fab left. Especially now it's only halfway over. July. So.
Yeah. I think you're totally fine to do it. I agree. If it's like super late, it's kind of weird, but I'd rather have you do it now. Cause if you're in 10th and you go and take a guy that someone in first tried to get or whatever, like that still keeps the competitive edge for the final 3 months of the year. I want you to be out there spending that money, take that player. And maybe that gives you a run. Cause one thing I remember is like my first year of the OCs a few years back, I got smoked, but I kept fighting till the end and I finished like in fifth or sixth by the end. And I learned a lot just by grinding my butt off. That was the year that Guilds won the overall in that same league. So like I learned a lot in that league, and Guilds was tweeting out because it was me and some other guys that like, we just wouldn't stop. And he was like, these guys don't stop making fab moves, even though they're out. He was getting annoyed, but he also said that's how you should do it. Like he respected it at the same time, because that's how if I'm going to win, I want everyone playing. Like we know in OC, we know in any of these leagues, you see people drop out. That's just the reality of the situation. But at the same time, like if you're going to go take something down, you kind of want to know that you fought the best fight you could fight type thing. And so I would rather Timothy or whoever go out there and get your guys, see what you got to do, and swing for the fences. And if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But at least you kind of kept things going. So I think it's fine. All right, we had one question here in the chat that I saved for this part of the show. Adam in the chat says, did either of you notice fewer overall ad drops in your 15-team leagues? Across my six NFC leagues and four had fewer than a dozen total moves, three OCs and three OCQs. It did seem a little weaker. It's that time of the year. I was going to say that much, but what about you?
Yeah, I'm scrolling through right now. I wish I could actually have actual data to answer this question, but I think it's because of the nature of the leagues that I'm in. They're the main event with such a large entry fee that people aren't bowing out yet, even though a lot of these guys do play football, I'm sure. But so looking at the OLAC, I had to scroll less to reach last week than I did the main event. So and the OLAC a little less competitive than the main event. Still 15 teams, but yeah, maybe a little bit, but I'm not seeing it yet in the leagues that I'm in for the most part.
Like my OC1 was pretty active. My OC2 is mediocre. OC3 was like seven moves. So it's again, all over the board. That's the beauty of it. But like my OLAC was still super active. I'm just kind of scrolling real quick. My main event queue, pretty darn active still for you have to win the whole thing to qualify. So yeah, it's just it's league dependent. Like the OCs is just the perfect example. Even the amount of moves was off the charts. So you never know. Just keep fighting the good fight, Adam, and see what you can do along those lines. All right, Ben, that'll wrap us up for another fun week of Bench with Bubba. Any final thoughts as we head into the final? I guess we still have one more week before the All-Star break.
Yeah, it's next week, and then that's it, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so interesting. We have like a little mini break today. It kind of feels like an All-Star break, almost a little one, because it's just three games. But yeah, just keep grinding out there in Fab and making your roster moves. I've heard people debating about not stashing as much anymore, which I kind of get that sentiment. I'm kind of stuck with some guys. Hopefully they should be back soon. It's a matter of them actually coming back. But yeah, thanks again, Bubba, for having me on. It was a fun. We've closed up the little June standout series that you had going. And until next time, it's I'll talk to you later.
Yeah, it'll be fun. I appreciate it as always. Everybody have a happy 4th of July. Safe 4th of July this week. You too. We'll be coming at you next week. I'm not sure if it'll be Ben or Mike just yet. We have time to get all that figured out, but we'll be back with you guys next week to recap Fab and much, much more. But to have some fun. And if you are listening on Tuesday, remember, only 3 games were played, 6 teams. That's 24 teams. You can still adjust your rosters pretty much everywhere. So pay attention to that. Try to maximize at least the first half of the week if you're in biweekly moves. But that'll do it, folks. Make sure you check out Ben on Twitter at @BreakingBen_T. I'm at BD Intrick, and this was Bench with Bubba, episode 677. Catch you all next time.